Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the Carson City Airport Authority meeting, Wednesday, November 14th, 7:02 p.m. At the Sierra Room, Carson City Community Center. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask the secretary to call the roll, please.
Chairperson Law.
Here.
Vice Chair Ryle. Member Barrett.
Here.
Member Golden.
Here.
Member Harris.
Here.
Member Harvey. Member Rogers.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you. Would you rise and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance? Have the members had time to review the minutes of the past meeting of the authority? Are there any questions or corrections about those minutes? Say again. Yes, we did. Yes. We have a quorum present. any questions or changes suggested to the minutes? I saw none. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes as presented?
I move to accept the minutes.
I have a motion from Member Harris and a second from Member Barrett. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed nay? None heard. Motion carries. Item D, modification of the agenda. The chairman reserves the right to modify the agenda in order to most effectively process the agenda items. Items may be taken out of order, may be combined for consideration by the authority, may be pulled or removed from the agenda at any time. Are there any suggestions for modification of the agenda? I have none. None heard. We will move on. Public comment. Is there members of the public who wish to address the airport authority may speak on agendized and non-agendized matters related to the airport. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chairman to calendar the matter for future airport authority meetings. Any public comment at this time? Awards and presentation. Mr. Moen.
Thank you, Chair Law. I would like to ask Gary Provis to join us up here.
Not everybody may recognize Gary today in
his real clothes.
He's usually under a tractor or a truck or whatever, but I want to take the opportunity to recognize Gary's have 8 years of service with the Airport Authority, and it happens to his service date happens to coincide with his birthday. So I thought it'd be a good chance to bring him up here and thank him for what he's done. He's been a great help to me in the time that I've been here since March. He's helped me with the airport and had the opportunity to show a lot for Manager in a way
between our previous manager and our interim manager when you saved my bacon more than once. I would like to add my appreciation as well. Couldn't have done it without it.
It has been a very interesting.
Thank you very much. We all appreciate your work.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
Moving on to item G, public hearings for discussion and possible action regarding four parcels on Arrowhead Drive to the northwest of the airport and west of Gonai Road, which are to be redesignated by the city as an airport buffer zone as part of the technical corrections to the Carson City land bill. Jennifer Budge is with us today, and she is here primarily to answer any questions that the members might have regarding this redesignation. This kind of stemmed from a meeting that she and I had sometime late last spring when we were talking about the development of the RV park to the west of us, and I was concerned that perhaps the city might be able to take the another two parcels that they owned and move that out of the direct path of the end of the airport protection zone, runway protection zone. And at that time, she informed me that that had come to us through a BLM lease, and we really didn't have the right to transfer, to exchange those properties. But she kept that in mind, and during the time that this lands bill came up for amendment and review, she was kind enough to talk to the folks at the city, and there are two parcels along the south edge of Arrowhead west of Gonai, and there are two parcels to the north of Arrowhead, west of Gonai, that under this will be redesignated as a safety area for overrun from our airport. And with the development, the beginning of the development of that RV park off the end of the runway, I think that this is a good move for the airport for the future as far as public safety is concerned. And so I invited Jennifer down to talk to us tonight, give us a little bit of overview, and have an opportunity for you folks to ask her questions if you feel you need more information. Jennifer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jennifer Budge, I'm the Carson City Parks and Recreation Director. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me. As Madam Chair mentioned, during your master planning process, we met, we discussed all of the plans for the airport and the areas basically surrounding the airport, and how the city might be able to help and ensure a safe facility for you all to operate. We looked at those facilities, we looked at those lands, and while there wasn't something we could do with a land exchange from the RV park and relocate that, when Congressman Amadei came to the Board of Supervisors and invited us to participate in any technical corrections from our previous lands bill, this immediately popped in my head, and I thought it might be a good opportunity to provide another safety buffer at the end of the runway. We did some additional due diligence. I do want to provide some background on this land so there's no confusion. We all have the facts. It's gone through quite, I think, quite a process. But we did receive these four parcels from the BLM through a lands bill that Congress passed. And on the lands, there was an intent in the Parks and Recreation Master Plan in 2007 that was approved that this could be a potential sports complex, an indoor recreation facility location, or a community park site. That there was no due diligence really done. I think the staff probably looked at a map and just saw the topography, and that might be an opportunity because there's not a lack of parks in this area. After some due diligence, since I've been here, Cinderlight has 8 5-acre historic mining claims from the late 1800s throughout these parcels. They're not contiguous, but they are encumbrances that run with the land. So obviously, those natural resources and that economic development opportunity for those claim holders need to continue forever. That's in perpetuity. So it's not a good location for a park or those opportunities that I previously described, nor would we want a park next to that type of location. It's just not a complementary use. However, it is also a good location for the buffer and the safety buffer zone that we had. And it would basically remain as is. The two parcels to the north of Arrowhead are in really good condition. There's a lot of native vegetation. There's dispersed recreation happening. People are walking their dogs and hiking out there and enjoying the native landscape. However, the two parcels south of Arrowhead are heavily disturbed from off-highway vehicles. There's dump sites. The airport staff has been wonderful and diligent, and when they can, go out and clean it up. So they've already become stewards of this land, which is really helpful. So tomorrow at the Board of Supervisors, item 19A will be heard, and this is one of a few parcels we're going to be discussing for potential congressional consideration for a future technical amendment to a lands bill. Nothing has been drafted yet. Nothing has gone forward. It would have to be at the direction of the Board of Supervisors. But what the goal is, if approved all the way through Congress, our recommendation is to remove the reversionary interest on these four parcels so we can enter into a third-party agreement. With the current restrictions on how we receive the land, we're not able to enter into any third-party agreements with the land. But if that happens, we can enter into an agreement with the Airport Authority. It could either be added on to the city's existing agreement with the Airport Authority, or you could enter into an entirely new agreement adding these parcels, so like a lease for that land. The city thinks it's a really good benefit. I think it's a good benefit for the health and safety of the public and to protect that neighborhood as well. So that's kind of a really quick overview, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Member Barrett.
Jennifer, I'm kind of playing with two hats here, and I recently received a email from Mr. Mervos. I can't pronounce the name. It's Mrvos, I think. And he's concerned that at the open space and parks meeting that you held out at the MAC some time back, that nobody would give him a hard answer, as he saw it, that this would never be used or developed. And I assume that's out of abundance of caution. Am I correct? And have you had interaction with him?
Thank you, Supervisor Barrett. I received three emails from that individual today as well, just late this afternoon. I did respond to him this afternoon. I also said that I could meet with him before the meeting tomorrow just to make sure we're all clear. I want to point out the historic mill site claims that are on site. Those are encumbrances on the property. Those activities, that mining activity, that cinder light can continue in perpetuity on those mill site claims. So that basically restricts the lands from any development, commercial or otherwise. So even if the city were to enter into an agreement with the Airport Authority, the Airport Authority cannot do anything with it because it's encumbered already with those mill site claims. So I did provide him with that information. I think it's something that he might not have been aware of. I think the question came up, and it was actually a joint meeting between the Open Space Advisory Committee and the Parks and Recreation Commission here. It was televised. We had standing room only. We had a lot of interest, not for this particular item, but several other of the lands bill items. So to me, the mill site claims encumbered enough. Should the board tomorrow direct that go forward, there can be additional clarification with the language about that, what a safety buffer is, and maybe providing a definition. If you wanted to provide that might be helpful as well.
So there's no doubt in your mind that this would remain a buffer for the airport and not ever get developed?
Yes, unless those mill site claims are relinquished, and speaking to Cinderlight, I don't think they have any intent on doing that, and it sounds like there's enough available natural resources for them to continue for the next 100 or so years. So unless those mill site claims are relinquished and something else is done with those claims, those are encumbering the land from any other type of development.
Thank you. I just wanted to get that on the record for the authority as well as tomorrow.
Any other questions of Ms. Budge? Jennifer, I really, really want to thank you for taking the comments that we had last spring and bringing them forward in this method, in this manner. I don't think it certainly wasn't my intention that we take these as they are redesignated and do anything with them. As far as I'm concerned, they need to sit there so that they are an overrun area and a safety area for the public. And having this in writing into this new revised land bill, I think will give us a great benefit. I truly do. So any other questions or comments? Thank you for being here tonight. Appreciate it very
much. Thank you so much.
I'll see you tomorrow. Okay. Moving on to item two for discussion and possible action to approve scope of work and professional service agreement with Linda Ritter Consulting to manage and facilitate a strategic planning process. Mr. Mullen.
Thank you, Chair Law. A couple meetings back, I believe it was August, September, the Airport Authority tasked me and with ferreting out a path forward with a strategic planning process. And with the help of Member Rogers and Member Harris, they arranged a meeting with Linda Ritter and Linda Ritter Consulting. And you may be aware that Linda Ritter has great government experience here in Carson City, but she also had the experience in Elko and was, as part of her duties, oversaw operations as well at the Elko Airport in the city manager's office. And so she has a good feel not only for the community here locally, but also for airports in general. We did look at other parties as well to participate in this process, but we sought an outline with Ms. Ritter for what this strategic planning process might look like. I met with her on a separate occasion, and then we fine-tuned some of the detail on that. And then I asked her to submit a proposal that we would consider this evening. As part of my onboarding, it was recognized early on that the strategic plan was imperative for the organization to really move forward with a focused intent on how the organization would operate and how we would develop the airport in the future. And as you know, all know, we're in the middle of a master planning process. We're just tightening up a economic impact study on the airport. And so it really dovetail nicely into this process of the strategic plan. So Ms. Ritter is in the audience tonight. If anybody feels the need to ask her any questions, I would like to invite her forward to do that. But if you also saw the board memo, the background and the planning process is just the beginning. We're just now going to, if we decide, the board decides to move forward with a professional service agreement with Ms. Ritter, then, you know, we'll tighten up the planning process as well as start identifying stakeholders in the community and put the finishing touches on the planning process itself. There's a timeline that she's also developed in that, and ideally we're thinking that we can have this wrapped up by the spring. So I think that really works well with our master plan and as well as all the other work we've undertaken in the past. So that's all the comments I have on that.
Ms. Ritter, would you like to come forward, please? State your name and spell your name.
Sure. Thank you. And for the record, I'm Linda Ritter, last name R-I-T-T-E-R. And I'm very pleased to be able to offer my services as far as facilitating a strategic plan for the airport. I do have a little bit of experience in airports. I was with the City of Elko when we built a new terminal, had to work with airlines, start passenger facility charges, and really make some substantial changes at that airport. Since then, I came to Elko. I served as a city manager for several years. After that, I was in charge of the strategic planning for the city. I've done a strategic plan for Western Nevada College, for the Convention and Tourism Authority, and I love strategic planning. I think that that's a tool most organizations, many organizations do without, but I think that they're imperative because it's really going to give you a roadmap for the future. You have your master plan, which is going to address facilities and what's happening on the ground. And if you look at the projections, they make projections about where the, you know, what your traffic and what's going to happen on the ground. However, in a strategic plan, you have an opportunity to really look at what your vision is for the future and impact those projections. Come up with your objectives, come up with the initiatives, things you're going to do to really change the direction in the way you want. This is done after a lot of input from your stakeholders, and so everybody gets everybody going in one direction. So I'm very excited to see the Carson City Airport go forward with such a plan.
Any questions of Ms. Ritter? I thank you for coming up.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We will move forward with a discussion among the members. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions of Mr. Moen regarding this item? If not, do we have any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to approve a professional services agreement with Linda Ritter Consulting to facilitate the CCAA strategic planning process not to exceed $3,570, conditioned upon a legal review and acceptance of the contract terms.
So moved.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Rogers. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Harris. Any discussion on the motion?
I'd only encourage our airport manager to have Ms. Vitter throw in one of her nice items of potteries for your office.
We'll not pass on that one. Okay. No further discussion on the item. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say nay. None heard. Motion carries. Moving on to the next item. Item number three. For possible action, approval of the Cinder Light Extension Agreement to continue as operator for the mining and sales at Carson City Airport Authority surplus rock and aggregate. Mr. Moen.
Thank you, Chair Law. Give me just a moment to see if I can get this graphic to display on the screen here. You probably noticed in your packets that I provide them, but they're printed in black and white, and they're just totally illegible, and I apologize for that. Let's see if I can shrink this down a little bit. No. There, oops. One or the other, right? I hope that's, well, it looks different here.
It's okay, just slide or go down. Just put up a little bit, you'll be fine.
That's good. Does that look better? As you recall, this was a board agenda item last month, and during the presentation, there was public comment that discussed the possibility of giving a fresh look at some of the issues surrounding the mining of the what's been termed as excess rock, but I've been calling it an on-airport quarry for lack of a better discussion. I do have a board member that supports the background of this information, but the result of last month's meeting was that we agreed to extend the Cinder Light contract on a month-to-month basis pending a review of that information. After the board meeting last month, I met on two different occasions out at the site, once with Mr. Eric Leitch and Member Harris, and then I also met on a separate occasion with Ms. Member Harris, Chair Law, and Member Rogers, as well as Greg Lehman with Cinder Light. And so, and including in that meeting was also Airport Engineer Brian Fitzgerald. And Brian Fitzgerald developed a couple exhibits for us to review. And the one that you see here up at the big screen, let me see if I can just move that up a little bit. I'm not exactly the technologically advanced guy here. But what this represents is the 3-to-1 grade that the contour lines are supposed to look like once the grading plan is complete. I'm going to ask Greg Lehman to come up here in a moment to talk about their current work plan and what their approach has been at the site, and I think that information will be valuable for everybody. But importantly is one of the things we reviewed was the FAA airport design standards, and we wanted to ensure that the airport was in conformance with the FAA advisory circular concerning design standards. And there are some lines that are a little bit hard to read on this graphic, but if you see the black lines along the runway edge, but also the trapezoidal feature that goes out to the east, that represents the RPZ. And so the area just to the east of the threshold is the 300-foot blast pad with the chevrons. And then from the threshold to the edge of the grade there where it starts to descend into the pit is a total of 638 feet. So we have the standard. We meet the FAA design standard for the airport obstacle-free areas as well as the safety zones. In the bottom left-hand corner of this graph, this represents 80% of all runway overruns. And what this shows is the distance from the end of the runway. And in the design standard, this demonstrates that anybody designed Category 2B aircraft taking off a runway 9 that needed to abort its takeoff, over 80% of those would be would stay in the airport environment. Now, the ones that don't stay in that airport environment are based upon circumstances that are probably outside the normal realm. Almost, if you had a single-engine aircraft that was at V1, which is just prior to rotation, and it lost an engine, this would demonstrate whether or not it would be able to make that braking distance and stop. All single, all twin-engine aircraft, whether they're turboprop or jet aircraft, are designed to continue to go past once you hit V1 to be able to fly in with one engine and be able to return to the airport for landing. So what this demonstrates just that we're meeting that design criteria. There's another exhibit, and let me see if I can pull that up, that represents the suggestion that we can expand the slope directly off the runway to a 10-to-1 grade. And a 10-to-1 grade is over three times of what the grading plan currently calls for. Engineer Brian Fitzgerald did a review of what that 10-to-1 grade would look like and how that would impact the airport's operation. And he also developed a cost estimate for what that would take. So as you see, the area between the runway threshold and that first line, that light green line, is still 638 feet. That's the same as it was on this 3-to-1 slope. So that piece is not changing. We're still in the design standard. But in order to get that 10-to-1 slope that was suggested, the estimate provided by the engineer was it would take over 200,000 cubic yards of material and approximately $2.1 million to grade that area out to a 10-to-1 slope. Now, another piece that's critical to this in our discussion is the master planning process. And in the master planning process, there's two things that we look at into the future. And one of those is whether or not the airport will expand beyond its current design standard of Category 2 Airport B. And the next category would be a 2C. Now, a 2C requires a runway. I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me. Requires a runway to be widened to over 100 feet and also to be lengthened to over 7,000. I think it's 7,100 and some change. 7,100. And so 100 feet. Wide, correct. And so that real estate would be made up based upon our alternative that 200 feet would go to the east. So from the threshold to the chevron area, two-thirds of that would be now runway. And then you'd have to have that 300-foot blast pad beyond that. And the other additional area would be made up to the west, which I believe is another 600 feet, and that moves that closer to Gonai Road. So there's some issues that would the airport would run into if we went to that design category. And so, you know, until we get through this whole master planning process and whether or not that ever comes to fruition, you know, I can't really say. However, in our discussions about the mitigation of the instrument, nighttime restriction to our instrument approaches, that area in the RPZ would certainly may come into airport use for airport lighting system. And so future considerations for that work area as part of our master planning process, we certainly want to get that work completed and mitigate, get the grading plan in place and get the appropriate slope and drainage. So before we go on into any other detail of that, I'd like to invite Greg Lehman to come up and just kind of give an overview of what their work consists of in that area, what the problems they tackled when they first came on site, and then how they plan to proceed here in the next few months.
You If you could say your name and spell your name for the record.
Greg Lehman, G-R-E-G, last name L-E-H-M-A-N. Thank you for having me. So you want me to just start, Ken?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so when we first took on site with the scope of work that was presented in front of us, we started what I would call on the east end of the project there. We've worked our way pretty much back to almost where we could start sloping on the east section, but we ran into quite a few obstacles along the way due to the way that the disposal of the hill came out. When they disposed the hill, they just threw rocks and everything that they had, didn't matter the size, in all areas, kind of where Ken has his pointer there. So we've got to that point, and we needed to generate some room on where to put some of those rocks because they're so big that the equipment they used would just not available. So we've worked ourselves around the north side, and we're about halfway through that north side, and we've already started the reclamation sloping on that side. It's not completed, but you can see it in the beginning stages. Up to date, everything, you know, we've just kind of been in that scope of work, and everything seems to be going along. Obviously, there's been quite a few challenges with the way the rock was disposed off of there, but we're just kind of working through them now.
And Greg, how much material have you guys removed from that site over the period of the contract?
We've removed 240,000 ton, roughly, from the beginning.
And that's averaged, what, about 30 plus a year or so?
Yeah, 30 to 40,000 ton a year. So,
I'm sorry. I was going to ask you, what was your estimate of the time frame at that rate for the work to be completed if you were to have your magic wand and say, if we remove 30,000 ton a year, when will we be done with that whole project?
Well, I know we'll be done with the north side this year. That section there will go pretty fast in this next 12 months. And then as we come around to finish up the east side and work to the south side, I'm not really sure yet exactly how much material is in there or sellable material due to the fact when you guys did the runway repaving, Granite Construction went in there and took a lot of their material from that south side. I don't know exactly how much they've taken out of there. They kind of cherry-picked around to the best stuff they could get. So I couldn't give you an exact estimation of how long that would be based on how much material's in there.
And the quality of the material?
And the quality of the material, yes.
And so once you go to that south side, from the discussion we had the other day, you're looking to a crystal ball kind of thing for the duration of the project on that side and the value of that project.
Right.
Correct.
Yes.
The finds and the materials that you have out there that are basically dirt that you're going to use for infilling once you start the sloping and the recovery part of the grade. Do you think you have sufficient fill to cover the area to the slope that is projected on the original contract?
Yes, there is there.
But it would be, would it be sufficient for the 10-to-1 grade?
No, there's okay. Not. There's not that material.
That's
there.
My concern. So, all right. Any other questions of Mr. Lehman? Seeing none, thank you very much. We appreciate you being here.
Yep, thank you, and thank you to everybody that I've worked with, Ken and Tim and Linda and Gary and everybody that's been involved. And the same as I invite anybody out at any time, we're always around. Be more than happy to do a tour with anybody. So.
And just for the record, when we had our meeting the other day, we talked about meeting every 3 to 6 months in order to get updates on where you stand on the material removal and so forth, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Very good.
Thank you.
I think that's going to be important. Mr. Mullen, any further comments?
No, I think, Chair Law, that with the engineer's help and the site tour, we've really got a good feel of what the project is. There's some crystal ball stuff, obviously, in the south side, but the area is different than the areas they've already worked in. So on the north side, it's, Greg has indicated that during the winter months when traffic is slowed down, it gives them a chance to get in there and really clear that out and begin the reclamation process for it to show what that grade is finally going to look like. As we saw on site, there's currently about a 6-to-1 slope in an area probably about 30 yards wide, and it gave us an idea of what the final product will look like. But I do want to draw, you know, I don't want to refrain just from talking about the FAA standards, as well as the safety concerns. We took all that seriously. And as a matter of fact, we had the opportunity to watch aircraft make approaches to the runway, and which was very helpful. And you could see that there were a variety of flight paths that people took. Some came in low and fast, looked like they were touching down the numbers. Others were kept some altitude and some airspeed and made their approach more closer to the aiming point of the runway. But one thing that was really critical to emphasize is that the equipment is below the grade. Now, there's occasion where they are working up near the edge of the slope there, and as Greg mentioned, that's not their favorite place to work with the equipment, but it keeps the penetration below the grade level. And Greg also pointed out that, we've removed over 240,000 ton of material out of that, and at $1.52, that's been a fairly good return onto the airport's revenue stream. And so that material was identified as sellable, and something that originally was looked as a problem has now turned into an opportunity for the airport. In our discussions with Senator Light, we were able to negotiate a CPI increase just so that we're getting current dollar value of what was agreed upon, you know, almost 7 years ago or 6 years ago. So the increase of the royalty was about 10%, so it goes from $1.52 to $1.67, and that's going to continue to serve the airport well in the future, especially on items that, you know, we do a lot of our maintenance stuff is all based on FAA grant money, and our local match is really critical, but there's stuff that's not grant eligible that we have to do as far as maintenance of just of the airport, but also the airport equipment that we use to continue to, you know, keep the grass mowed, to maintain the parking lot on the east side of the airport, upgrade lighting. You know, we've got LED on the north ramp, or on the south ramp. We still have sodium vapor. So those type of projects are, you know, to have revenue available to complete those for the safety enhancement of the whole airport community are really critical. So with the board packet, I included a financial impact review, and if there's any questions for me directly, that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Any questions of Mr. Mullen from the other board members? Thank you. Do we have public comment on this item, Mr. Leitch? And I have to say this evening, since we started late, we are going to keep our comments to 3 minutes. Thank you. And say your name and spell it for the record.
Eric Leitch, L-A-E-T-S-C-H. I'm delighted with the work of Mr. Fitzgerald and the plots that you have up there. I hope all of you had a chance to look at them in your packet and see them in color. I'm here tonight to ask you to defer your decision on this for at least one more month. I'm going to ask you to form a subcommittee of at least two authority members to work with the airport manager, the airport attorney, the airport engineer, and possibly somebody from, you know, people from the airport community, not necessarily me. You are a fresh board that is seeing this for the first time. We have a new manager who has learned a great deal. We have effectively a new airport engineer, and Brian Fitzgerald was not in the lead engineer on this originally. You have the opportunity with at least two authority members who have deep experience in complex business projects. I would encourage you to have a subcommittee, including Mr. Golden, who has a background in law, business, and aviation, and Mr. Rogers, who has extensive business and experience. I'd like to try to point out, in the limited time, if you want to ask me questions, I can tell you in a couple of minutes each the kinds of things I would look into. But let me give you, if I can, just one example of data that begins with assumptions. Our manager told you that Mr. Fitzgerald, our engineer, did this very, very helpful plot, contour plot. And you can see that it says estimated volume 200,000 cubic yards, and that it was $2 million to do something with it. Very, very important information. What is it based on? Is it based on removing everything the way Cinderlite is doing in the east area and then putting material back? Or do we want to consider an alternative? May I walk over there and point at that?
You only have about 30 seconds left.
Now, you can cut me off whenever you think this is not useful to the
Okay. Right, folks? Before you get started, Mr. Golden.
Go ahead. And then I have a question for you.
Okay. They can't hear you, so let's turn it on.
Would this work?
It's safer to us.
I can talk louder. Okay. If you look at this plot, if you look here, this is virtually undisturbed rock. This is part of the original rock pile. What was originally contemplated was to take the excess material. The excess material is when you start up here and you take a slope line down to the natural grade. Then you take that excess material away and you sell it. That's not what has happened. What has happened is that Cinderlite, with the permission of apparently the former airport manager, has come in and taken the whole slope. They haven't taken the excess material. Now, we have the opportunity to take another look at this and decide what makes sense, fresh look. This has not been disturbed, the south side.
Mr. Golden.
Eric, I'm going to give you an opportunity to speak very briefly because I have a couple questions for you, okay? I need you to help me understand. You're obviously concerned about something here. What are you concerned about occurring? And please answer it in one sentence.
I'm concerned about the process. I'm concerned, two sentences, I'm concerned that the authority is being asked to make a very, very important decision without having an adequate investigation, the sort of thing that you and I could go out there and look at in a matter of minutes, and you would say, oh, now I can understand where
okay.
10 to 1 slope comes
enough,
from.
Enough. You're concerned about the process. Thank you. Okay. I have one last question for you, and I've, again, addressing your concern, because then you can help me understand. You can help my associates understand if you answer this question. Hypothetically, let's say that these two gentlemen from Cinderlite walk out of here and Cinderlite has no agreement with us month to month, and they decide, you know, we don't want to do business with the airport authority anymore. What is the resolution that you're seeking? I am at a loss to understand what exactly you're seeking, because they're bound, well, they're no longer bound.
they're no longer bound to restore this, okay? They're month to month now. Would you like to see it stay the way it is? I'm just trying to understand, and I think everybody else up here, I don't want to speak for any of you folks, but my associates here, I don't want to see it stay the way it is, okay? I'd like to see Cinderlite continue to mine the property and quarry the rock and then restore it to the grade that was agreed upon. And while I'm discussing that, while you think about your answer, if you'd like it to stay just the way it is today, okay? You can think about that. I have a question for our airport manager, and if he can't answer it, maybe Mr. Lehman can answer it, because it's a simple answer here. Distance from the area that has not been disturbed, the gradient looks to be about 4590. What is the... I'm sorry, 4690. Yeah, it makes sense, because field elevation is 4700. So the distance from the 4690 contour, runway center line, down to the current natural grade to the east. So from there, move the there. What do you think that distance is?
The distance from the runway edge to this contour line,
630. Right. So we're probably looking at like, we're probably, I'm thinking 450.
Yeah.
I can tell you it's 450.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking. It's about 450 feet. Yeah. So what we're really talking about here is 450 feet that'll never be able to be used as an overrun. And I would hate to see someone overshoot the runway. But, boy, you're talking about something that is, it's 450 feet. It's being argued over, and we have a 6,100-foot runway with another 600 feet of overrun. That's nearly 7,000 feet and 450 feet that's going downhill no matter what, okay? It's going downhill in a hurry, and we're having this incredible discussion about it. And, again, I'd hate to see someone run over and go down that embankment. But I'm sorry, Mr. Leitch, I don't see what the problem is, because we have a greater problem not working with Cinderlite, and if they don't fix it. Do you see where I'm coming from? I want that grade restored, okay? We don't have that ability to do so now. So I asked you a question. And I just want a simple answer. You've already used up your time. Just answer the question. Would you like it to stay the way it is today?
Of course not.
Thank you. End of my questions. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir. Any further questions from any of the members? Any further discussion?
I just have a brief comment, and that is at our last meeting, it was Mr. Leitch that brought this issue up, and I had some concerns and voiced them, and I've been out to the quarry twice, and I've seen the work that Atkins did, and I've been involved in a lot of discussions, and I have to say that my concerns were ill-founded, and I really appreciate the work that Ken and I appreciate the time of Mr. Lehman, and I'm very satisfied with the work that's been done, and I'll be happy to vote for the new contract.
Any other comments? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the 3-year contract extension with Cinderlite Trucking to operate the on-airport rock quarry on behalf of the Carson City Airport Authority and to sell airport rock at the new royalty rate of $1.67 per ton of rock sold. Do I have a motion?
You have a motion from myself, contingent on. Want to make sure this is included. I'm sorry, what's that? Oh,
Mike.
I'd like to ensure that we have assurances on the restoration of that slope in the agreement. So I'll move to approve the 3-year contract extension with Cinderlite to operate the on-airport rock quarry on behalf of the Airport Authority, to sell the airport rock at the new royalty rate of $1.67 per ton of solid of rock sold, pardon me, with the provision that Cinderlite will be conducting restoration upon completion of the quarry mining, as agreed upon.
Do I have a second?
I second.
I have a motion by Member Golden and a second by Member Harris. Any discussion on the motion? Mr. Rogers.
Where is the current black and white description of Cinderlite's responsibilities relative to restoration? Where does it exist now? Where is it?
I believe the restoration agreement was in the original agreement signed in 2012.
Yeah. I think Mr. Lehman wants to speak.
Mr. Lehman.
So regarding the restoration, we had our engineer draw up a plan as well as your guys' engineers, and we have a bond in place as well that covers the restoration. So there is already a bond in place, and it's already there. So
that's adequate assurance for me, sir. Thank you.
Yep.
Any further questions? Mr. Rogers.
If that's adequate insurance for you, why did you...
I want to make sure that the matter is addressed, that we, in particular, that Airport Council and our airport manager ensure that our rights to the property are protected and that there is a restoration provision in place. It doesn't have to be in place with the new three-year contract.
The extension.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. I just want to be assured that when Cinderlite says that, you know, we're done, we have, you know, an assurance that they'll be restoring that to the agreed-upon 3-to-1 grade. That's all.
Yeah, and I believe that was in the original agreement, and the extension just is not a new agreement. It keeps the terms in place of the original agreement.
Understood.
But I want to make just one point at this time, if it's appropriate. I've only been here 8 months, but the outstanding community partner for the Airport Authority, Cinderlite, has been incredible. And I'll give you the example of creating the new approach off Arrowhead Drive. There was nothing in our agreement, the 2012 agreement or the previous extensions, about changing that pattern. And it's been a sore subject for a lot of people for a long time, including when I did interviews with Board of Supervisors members about getting that change. So between Cinderlite, the City Public Works Department, and also the Airport Authority, we moved on that and did a relatively short period of time. And Cinderlite bared the burden of that whole thing. The city designed it. They upfronted the money for and solicited the contract, and it was all completed. And just recently, we approved payment for our 50% of that. And that was a handshake deal. And I just want to emphasize that they've been an awesome partner in this and willing to listen to suggestions and have dialogue about this project, just like we are today, anytime we've had an item come up for discussion.
Mr. Rogers.
I am thrilled that we have Cinderlite as a partner. I have every expectation that they operate in good faith. I don't have any concerns about the good faith of both parties. But I'm also experienced enough to know that 5 or 8 years from now, quarrying is done, we could be in any circumstance. I mean, a million things could change during that time. And I also am experienced enough to know that if it ain't in writing, it doesn't exist. So that's all I've been. I've asked 3 meetings in a row now, or maybe only 2 in a row. Where is the clause that says that this is going to happen? And then what I get is, yep, it's in there, no problem. It's like, well, show it if it's in there. Bring it. Let's see it.
I think 3 years ago when we did the last extension, we had those documents, the original contract, and I remember seeing them in there, but I'm not, I don't have the original document in hand.
And I'll ensure that any formal signatures will include that copy of the 2012 agreement with those provisions in it, and we won't go forward until that's all. We won't sign anything until that's all together in one pack.
Fair enough.
Madam Chair, I recognize that we started late, and you like to enforce the you would like to enforce the 3-minute rule, but I noticed Mr. Leitch had his hand up, and so I'll ask him a question if that meets with your.
Okay. That's fine. Go right ahead.
What did you want to add briefly, Mr. Leitch?
Thank you very much for that courtesy. We understand that a complete. Mr. Rogers' point is exactly on point. Somehow things can change in the years. That has nothing, no reflection on Cinderlight or anyone else. Completion bonds are part of risk management. You have an engineer that's told you that to handle the 10-to-1 slope would be a $2 million project. Turns out the volume of material for the 3-to-1 slope is about 1/3 of that. So roughly handling that would be $600,000 or $700,000. That's consistent with the $400,000 to $500,000 that we heard 7 years ago. What's the amount of the completion bond?
Mr. Lemon, do you know that?
The amount, well, that's not for bringing all the material in that he's talking about. It's like, I want to say 15 or 18,000. I don't know off the top of my head exactly the number, but it's for reseeding and everything that was to be completed. Yeah, and it's the same bonds that I've done with BLM, the same bonds I've did with the Forest Service. I restored the Dresslerville pit down in Garnerville, and we followed those same standards when we create those bonds. So that's what the bond is.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. I have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Any opposed? None heard. Motion carries. Moving on to item 4 for discussion and possible action to approve Lean Engineering Nighttime Operation Feasibility Study. Mr. Mullen.
Chair, I'd like to request a 5-minute recess, and I get Paul Hanna with Lean Engineering on the phone. And
we'll have a 10-minute recess for.
Thank you.
The meeting back to order. It is 8:10. We will move on to item 4 for discussion and possible action to approve Lean Engineering Nighttime Operation Feasibility Study. Mr. Mullen.
I still have some technical difficulties, but I think we're there.
This is Paul.
Mr. Hanna, can I put you on hold for a moment? You're on speaker with the Carson City Airport Authority, and I'll address this item so you can hear what's going on, and then we'll invite you to speak. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair Law. On the phone with us is Paul Hanna with Lean Engineering. Paul made a site visit to the Carson City Airport a couple weeks ago. I guess it's actually been longer than that now. Back in September. And as you know, we've been having this discussion about the mitigation of the nighttime restriction to the instrument approach to Carson City. And this has been identified as a safety issue for a long time. And I was tasked in the summer to look into this and see if I could find a possible solution to mitigating this. And I was directed by Kaufman Associates to meet up with Lean Engineering at one of the summer conferences I attended, the SWAE conference in Sacramento, and met Paul Hanna there. And then we had an opportunity to just talk a little bit at the meeting and give him an idea of what we're looking for and what our challenges were. And he, at that point in time, let me know that this is, they're not a stranger to this kind of work, and this is really what they do. And they have a working partnership with the FAA on these type of issues. So as you recall, last month this item was on the board agenda as well, and we were actually, the agenda called for us to make a decision at that time about engaging with Lean Engineering with a professional service agreement to begin the first three tasks of that were outlined in their proposal. I'll direct your attention to that document now. On the feasibility, nighttime operations feasibility study, task one is a baseline assessment of what's currently existing at the airport. And then task two would be to look at the assessment for lighting. And one of the things that Mr. Hanna directed me to was there's similar approaches out throughout the country that do this. And one of the big ones is at JFK in New York City. And there's a very interesting video online that shows this strobe light that kind of, I don't know what the name of the bridge is. It's not the, Paul probably can help me out, but as the aircraft makes its approach, and this is during VFR type weather, but at night, this rabbit just continues all the way along to the airport, and it's not necessarily a straight line. And so when Paul first indicated this to me, I was fascinated by that and ran to YouTube and pulled up a video to really get a feel of what that looked like. So that's a big part of their assessment is this lighting enhancement. As you recall, previously when the FAA added the nighttime restriction, there was some discussion about lighting obstacles out there, and that is actually was a distraction to what the real issue was. The issue was not so much being able to see the obstacle as it is to have a clear path forward to the airport and be free of obstacles at that time. That's why the lighting enhancement is critical to this. And then the task three of that is really the flight procedure assessment, and that's where you bring in the FAA for a flight check. So they won't get to this point unless they have a product that they believe can help solve that solution. And then task four and five really deal with the implementation process of a future approach. But there's big questions, not just in the study itself, but also how do we finance the lighting system in the future and what the grant eligibility of that is. So what I've asked Mr. Hanna to do today is to talk a little bit about what their company, who their company is, how they mitigate these type of issues at airports across the country, but also what's it look like on the back end once they get something like this established and approved, and how does an airport like Carson City fund that kind of stuff. So with your indulgence, I'll turn it over to Paul Hanna.
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me okay on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Oh, excellent. It's a pleasure speaking with you here this evening. So, thanks, Ken, for the introduction. The firm I work for is Lean Engineering, and we've been in business for, I think, somewhere between 20 and 25 years, specifically dealing with issues associated with lighting, nav aids, electrical power systems, and in the last, I'd say, 6 to 7 years, we've also been dealing specifically with issues related to airspace and flight procedures. And for those of you that have had the good fortune of working very closely with any branches of the FAA or other airports that have to deal with either lighting or nav aids, you'll very quickly discover that if you're not also speaking the flight procedure side of the equation, you're usually winding up with a lighting system that doesn't do anybody any good, or a nav aid that doesn't connect to anyone's flight procedures. And so we've been doing, I would say, the lion's share of our work in the western United States. So we're the current folks dealing with San Francisco, Los Angeles International Airport. We're working up at the Reno Airport for their rehabilitation of of both of the main runways involving some instrument flight procedures and lighting projects up there. We've also been dealing, as Ken mentioned, with some airports that have had very similar challenges to what we're seeing there at the Carson City Airport. In particular, we've been working with the Aspen Airport in Colorado, the Telluride Airport in western Colorado, We were working with the Cody Yellowstone Regional Airport as well in Wyoming. And obviously each of those airports have fairly unique challenges, specifically for mountainous terrain that tends to limit not only the viability of aircraft operations in some cases in only one direction, like Aspen, but also most of those airports have, I would say, moderate to significant nighttime operations challenges. I think the expression that the FAA flight inspection team used to Telluride was that it was like flying into a black hole, and they felt that there was no way on earth anyone was going to make an approach in there, unfortunately. So we've got quite a fair amount of experience in working with airports, I think, in a very similar situation to Carson City. And what we see, though, as an opportunity here is that the restriction that's been imposed on the airport is solely imposed by the flight inspection team and not necessarily by limitation of the flight procedures that have been developed there at the airport. And I think that's what's giving us a little bit of hope that the path that we're recommending for starting with a feasibility study, which would then lead to information being inserted into the master plan update that's currently occurring for the airport, would be the highest likelihood of success in not only, finding the ideal, most cost-effective solution for getting nighttime operations, but also ensuring that the FAA pays the maximum share of the cost for both the safety enhancement and for the capacity enhancement there at the airport. And I don't know if Ken's mentioned this perhaps in previous meetings, we're rather excited about the possibility of performing this feasibility study because the opportunity there, it's so close to potentially establishing not just a kind of a safe outcome for Carson City, but also for other airports that have this very unique combination of kind of what they call next-gen or PDN approaches that are offset from the runway that can absolutely benefit from kind of advanced analysis on the approach lighting system itself. And that's the situation there at the airport, which is that new approaches have been developed, and obviously safety enhancements have been applied at the airport there. But because the approach is coming in from an offset angle, it's creating kind of a combination of challenges that can't necessarily be addressed only by a traditional approach lighting system that you would line up on the end of the runway. So something like a rail or just a MALS, like a medium approach light system. And as Ken mentioned, there are other airports in the United States that have successfully applied what they call a lead-in light system, which, as the name implies, essentially tries to lead aircraft to the runway safely, starting from the last point on the approach where flight crews essentially are making the switch over from pure kind of instrument navigation over to the visual portion of the approach. And then the idea is that as they look out the window or out the cockpit, they're seeing this sequence of flashing lights. But the key for what we are proposing for this feasibility study is trying to figure out what is the right combination of approach light systems that kind of maximize the safety benefit, maximize the likelihood that flight inspection will continue to approve nighttime operations there at the airport forever, but also minimizes the total cost expenditure both to the FAA and to the airport. As Ken mentioned, and I'm going to mispronounce the bridge, it's called a Canarsie approach into JFK. The length of the lighting array that's used on that approach is extraordinary. And as you might expect, so too is the cost for that particular approach system. But in the case of Carson City, the way that the new approaches have been designed to the runway presents an opportunity that a much shorter potential lead-in light solution is possible, we think, and possibly a very, very short lead-in light solution, potentially in combination with a more traditional approach light system that the airports in the region are familiar with, the airport district office is familiar with approving more readily. And it's so what we would like to do with the feasibility study is take a look at the existing flight procedures and the lighting designs that we think would best achieve like I said, the safety and the cost benefit effectively at the same time, and then see how small tweaks of both the flight procedures and the approach lights might lead to that sweet spot of achieving that highest safety and capacity enhancement for nighttime arrivals. And what we think we can achieve by at least getting through the first three tasks is a more definitive and complete answer about what is possible there at the airport as far as achieving nighttime operations with potential, lighting enhancements. And then that if the feasibility study does show that there are good combinations that are cost effective, that achieve the highest likelihood of reaching nighttime operational approval, in particular from the flight inspection group, then that information would be included as an appendix into the master plan. And by inserting it into the master plan at that point, things become eligible for FAA grant money to be issued, at the point in time when the airport would be ready to move forward with those enhancements. But I've kind of thrown maybe a lot of information at you in a very short period there, and there are other steps, following the insertion into the master plan. But are there questions about maybe the feasibility study itself so far, or the things that we'd like to explore that I've mentioned?
I guess this is Chair Law. I guess my primary question is, when you look at the breakdown of the tasks, you talk about getting to the point where the FAA, we include the results of the feasibility study in the master plan, and if we have paid you, say, the first three tasks at that point, are any of those fees recoverable through the FAA? In other words, can we apply for retroactively to cover those costs?
That's a good question. We've been asking around with the airport's district office representative as to whether or not some or all of the costs could be recovered. We don't have a definitive answer just yet, unfortunately. If this project were undertaken as part of the master planning process purely, then the answer is a definitive yes. But we're still chasing an answer down on that particular topic.
Are there any other questions, Mr. Mr. Golden?
Good evening, and thanks for your presentation at this late hour. I really have some comments for you and comments for my fellow authority members, for our airport manager and airport council on this particular matter. This is an important issue. It may be the most important issue we're faced with over the course of the next 12 months. And I think it's critical that we pursue this. That stated, I'm the kind of person, I like to see a return on my investment. And I want some assurances, because we're going to be coming out of pocket for this. The airport's going to be paying for this. It's not going to be something where we have a grant with a 10% match. We're going to have to pony up. And that's okay, in my opinion. I think that's just fine, because the benefits to us would be that return on investment. What concerns me is, and I'm not saying we shouldn't do this at all, I just throw this out on the table. What concerns me is we're being asked to put out $50,000 roughly, which is fine under normal circumstances. I just want to know that we're going to get a return on investment there, because I know how the FAA is, and I know especially their division that deals with approaches. I've dealt with them on more than one occasion, and boy, they are, they dig their heels in when it comes to saying no. And so that's the only thing I bring up. I'm all in favor of doing this, but I just want to point out that we need to make sure that we spend this money wisely and that we get a return on investment. Otherwise, we're throwing $50,000 down a rat hole. It's nice to have a study, But if the study doesn't garner us any return on investment, we just wasted $50,000.
Mr. Hanna, the way I read this, this is the chairman again. The lump sum fee is payable upon the completion of each task. So once we get through with task one, there's about a $5,000 commitment there. And if at the end of that you feel that going forward is going to be a little more difficult and less chance of success, how has Lean Engineering in the past handled these studies when they get to a certain point and they say, I don't think we're going to be successful?
Points that were made previously about making this kind of investment. What we've done in the past with proposals like this is we try to give regular updates to, in particular, Ken and other stakeholders there at the airport about our progress. And if at any point we discover that there's something that's really going to throw a wrench in some of the underlying assumptions or there's maybe some aspect, for instance, of the approach procedure, or one of the big things we're very concerned about making sure that we identify is power supply to any of the lighting systems, especially if they wind up going a little bit off the airport. That, to us, is one of the biggest concerns we have that we want to get identified right away in the feasibility assessment, which we have, I believe, in task two. If for some reason we get even partway into one of these tasks and we find some kind of showstopper like that, then our intention is to stop right there, and that we have no intention of collecting the remainder of the fee for any subsequent tasks.
That was precisely what I wanted to hear, because I can see getting through a portion of this and all of a sudden you recognize, as the professional out here that deals with them all the time, that you have a non-starter. The last thing I want to do is spend the rest of the money on something that we know we're not going to get. Member Barrett.
Could you speak to the point that Mr. Golden has made regarding the FAA digging in its heels? You've been advertised to us as someone who has an association with the FAA. Has that been your experience on occasion?
So I have two things maybe I could add. So we've been very fortunate to have a very strong working relationship both with the Western Flight Procedures team themselves, which is the folks based up in Des Moines, Washington. I know it sounds like Des Moines, Iowa, but they've just moved the offices over to Des Moines, Washington, just south of the SeaTac International Airport. And we're usually speaking with one or more members of their team on a weekly, if not daily, basis on a number of projects. So we rarely have, I think, the kinds of challenges that airports typically face when they're working with the flight procedures teams, partly because of kind of a long-running experience we have with them. And they've come to know that when we, you know, have requests or we have projects like this, it's because we think that there's something real there and there's an opportunity to make an enhancement. And this is certainly the case. I will add, I mentioned maybe at the top of my opportunity to speak with you all today that we've been pretty excited about the opportunity for this project. And by that, I mean, we have actually spent a few hours chatting with some of the folks in the flight procedures teams, both in Washington and at the national level in Oklahoma City, where the flight standards and policies are set. And I would say that from the group of people who are responsible for designing flight procedures and maintaining them and publishing them, they're taking a rather open-minded perspective, I think, on the possibility of this feasibility study and where it could go. I do want to comment, though, that the group that we are most concerned about is actually a slightly different group within the FAA called the Flight Inspection Services Group. Those are the people who bring in the FAA aircraft to actually perform the flight inspection of the instrument approach procedure, departure procedure, after it's been completed. We do have a long, successful relationship of working with the flight inspection group, but one of the harder things to do is to you know, convince that particular team that an airport that has at any time received a nighttime restriction should have that overturned. The only occasions where that is where that has been applied is when some kind of new lighting system has been implemented at the airport. So, for instance, the Telluride Airport was for the one particular direction that they wanted to have an approach, they were unsuccessful because the residents of the community were not interested in installing a lighting array that their mountain ski villages would be looking down on, because their houses would be above the lighting array, kind of looking down on the system. So they were not interested in that, and therefore the flight inspection group, while the flight procedures team was okay with moving forward, the flight inspection team is not. So that's one of the things that we want to make sure we've got very well ironed out as we get through the second and third phases of our feasibility study. The fourth phase of the feasibility study is really where we had intended to sit down specifically with that flight inspection team. But I think we want to make sure we get through the first three phases, before we spend any time with them. So, so just to summarize, we do understand that working with the flight procedures team can be very challenging. We were informed that if the airport were to make an independent request, so for instance, if Ken was to make an independent request to the FAA flight procedures team to ask for a nighttime feasibility study, the only answer that would be given at this time would be you need to add lights, and they wouldn't be able to do anything else because the FAA doesn't have the resources, and they believe that the level of analysis and creativity, so to speak, that they can apply is complete for Carson City. However, we did talk to them about what our approach would be through this feasibility study. They agreed that there's merit to it, and that we should, if the fee was acceptable and the path towards getting the feasibility study completed was acceptable, that this could potentially provide a viable path to a nighttime operation. But it is the flight inspection group that will be the ultimate decider here in the process.
Thank you. Very thorough.
Any other questions of Mr. Hanna? Mr. Rogers.
I'd like to talk a little bit about timing. If we go through the first three tasks, do we have an expectation of when that might be able to be completed? And I'm thinking mostly of how that relates to the master planning process. Is it reasonable to expect that we could complete the first three tasks in a time frame that supports us submitting the master plan when we want to?
Paul, I'll take this one. Prior to engaging Lean further than an initial phone conversation, I spoke directly with Kaufman Associates as well, and they relayed back to me that they could slow crawl the final phase of the master plan to time it with the feasibility study. So in other words, if we weren't even looking at this, the master planning process would probably be done somewhere around the end of December or January. But knowing that we were going to take a crack at this nighttime instrument approach, that they would temper their progress to ensure that this was included. As Paul mentioned, the issue of FAA funding this, if it was part of the master plan, I think I've made a note of that. Something I want to kind of pursue on this end now, being that we're in the master plan, we might be able to make a amendment to the grant and make a request for that. So it's something to look at. So I got a note to follow up on that component. But our other process is that I wouldn't even consider doing this unless it was included in the master plan, because I think if it wasn't, then we have zero chance, of completing this task. And Paul, do you want to add to that?
I completely concur. We're just very this is part of our excitement, because we haven't missed the window of opportunity to potentially include the results of this into an appendix in the master plan. If we can get that in there, it really streamlines all of the future process of getting reimbursement for as much of the lighting system and any other enhancements as possible.
A slow crawl or not by Kaufman, I don't know that I heard time guesstimate on your part for how long those first two or three items could be done?
Fair point, and your recollection is correct. Our team has actually Ken kindly mentioned to us that he had the opportunity to present this feasibility study to you all in the last meeting, and that it might take into this meeting. So we've actually got a good chunk of our team kind of standing by, hoping for possible concurrence to proceed with the feasibility study. And if that is something that can be done relatively soon, our team would essentially start work here immediately at the last week of November into December. And then we believe that we would be able to get through the first three tasks, if not at the towards the end of December, within the first or second week of January. So I don't know how that perfectly aligns with Kaufman's timelines, but our team is essentially ready to fast-track our analysis to get as much of it done in the month of December as possible.
Thank you. That's quicker than I expected. Thanks.
We're very excited about the opportunity.
Okay. Any other questions of Mr. Hanna? Any other comments? Do we have any public comment on this item? Hearing none, I would accept a motion to approve the professional services agreement with Lean Engineering to facilitate the development of an unrestricted instrument approach to the Carson City Airport not to exceed $49,000, contingent upon legal review and acceptance of the contract terms.
Also move.
Second.
Chair Law, can I make a correction to the motion? And it's my error.
Yes.
If you look on the last page, it says $49,235, and so I think that we should adhere to the correct number on that. My mistake.
So corrected the motion. Mr. Golden, Mr. Barrett?
Yes.
Okay. So that will be the motion to include not to exceed $49,235. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. None heard. Motion.
Thank you, Mr. Hanna.
Thank you, Paul.
Moving to item 5 for discussion and possible action to review request for through the fence access agreement for the 28-acre parcel east of Taxiway Bravo. Mr. Mullen.
Thank you, Chair Law. We haven't had a ton of discussion about this issue, but it was identified early on that through the fence access is really deeded into this property that's to the east of Taxiway Bravo and does pose a development problem for the Carson City Airport. And the reason I specify that is that the infrastructure for future development along Taxiway Bravo on that fence line is low-hanging fruit as far as the property itself. There's utilities there. There's the infrastructure to access the taxiway and the runway. And so this has really limited any potential development along that. When I came on board and we had our meeting with the ADO at the Nevada Airports Association conference, of which Chair Law was in attendance, we identified that property early on as something that we would like to acquire to eliminate that issue of through-the-fence access, but also would designate a future development possibility of an additional 28 acres along that line. So that was included in our ACIP and added to our airport layout plan, which is also going to be reflected in the master plan. About 6 weeks ago, I was contacted by Supervisor Bonkowski through his firm NAI Alliance about a potential purchase option on 3 acres of that parcel, just being the self-serve fuel farm in that general area. And the gentleman is currently attendant on the airfield, and he's looking to acquire about 3 acres of land, and he wanted to understand what the through-the-fence access impact would be to him and what kind of operation that he could put on there. One of the things that they were requesting besides a hangar was to conduct a Part 135 operation, which is strictly prohibited through the fence access and must be done on the airport. So I informed him of that issue. And the other piece is he's also looking to do some sort of self-storage of fuel. So what I asked them to do was to give me some time to research this issue and to be able to come back to them at a later date with some sort of a follow-up, not just about the an access agreement, but also whether or not the first thing I wanted to look at is whether or not through-the-fence access rights were followed to the property, current property owner, from the previous deed trust of the John D. Winters Trust. And so I asked our airport legal counsel to complete a legal opinion of that, of which I'll share with you tomorrow. I'm not asking for a vote on anything today, but what I'll do is after I've had a chance to review that, I want to get that to all the members. But I want to ensure that legal document is highly confidential because based upon the information that's provided in there. So as part of our discussion about this last month, I followed up with the ADO and had a conference call, and that was the first thing that they asked us on the top was that if that property was acquired, would that make the through-the-fence access issue go away? And it would. If we acquired it, that would eliminate that possibility. So there was a supplemental grant that the FAA had for rural airports that was issued earlier this summer for $1 billion worth of grant money available. Carson City Airport did not make that initial list of rural grant airports or eligible airports. However, the FAA, now all that money was absorbed in that initial round, and the FAA published through the Federal Register and opened that grant up to other airports. And so with the approval of Chair Law, we entered into a one-time agreement with Armstrong Associates, our future consultant, to apply for grant monies to acquire that property. So what we currently have in process is the FAA ADO's office aware of the through-the-fence issue. We have their interest in finding a way to mitigate that problem, whether it's acquisition of the property itself, and even suggested by the property owner that if we were to value what those access rights might be and whether or not we could purchase the rights but not the property. So those are a couple different issues that are floating around out there. I'm not sure how you would value those, whether you could find an appraiser that could come across a similarly situated airport that did something of that nature. But that 28 acres is not contiguous in the respect that it could go to different owners. It could be 3 acres here, it could be 10 acres there, it could be 20 acres for another. Like they have a party looking at a 28-acre parcel that would have no need for through-the-fence access. So those type of issues, as they arise, we might be able to pick that off. But as we identified in the master plan, that unless we establish fixed points to access the property, we can't develop. And if we can't develop, that really limits the property owner's issue to develop. So somewhere along there, we have to come together as two different groups and make some sort of determinations about what that looks like in the future. So we're really at the initial stage of this. That's why I'll circulate the legal opinion to you for your review. Then I've already sent it to the ADO's office for their review. I just did that this morning. And once we initiate that conversation, we'll kind of see how this plays out. But it is in flux. And with the economy as it is, there are more interests in property like that. And as we're going through the master plan, this is certainly something that we would like to tighten up as well before we get to any conclusion. So with that, Chair Law, I'll turn that back over to you for questions.
All right. Like Mr. Moen said, this is something that we've been approached from several different angles at. And if there are any questions that you have, you can either bring them forward tonight or you can contact him individually after the meeting and find out any specifics on the points you have. Do we have any questions at this point of Mr. Moen? Mr. Rogers?
The current offer for the 3 acres, what obligations, if any, do we have for a timely response? I mean, is there a limit on the amount of time we can take to evaluate possibilities before we have to give a definitive answer, before we're required by any statutes to give a definitive answer.
We would certainly run thin on their patience if we just drug it out. But what I did inform them at that discussion was that this is going to take time to develop. And it was the airport was not slow rolling them for the purpose of stalling, but that there were a lot of issues to look at, and that even precipitated a phone call to the airport council from the property owner about what our process was. I guess my initial explanation of slow roll was not defined. I did inform them that we'd have to go through the ADO's office and maybe do some additional research. But if we were to develop a through-the-fence access agreement, what we would have to do is define a point where that property, the adjacent parcel, not just his property, but the parcel that would be next to that, where they would have access to the airport. So that would allow us to identify at least one point. But the issues are even greater than that, because we don't want to end up with widowed parcels that would become unusable and untenable for the airport. So they understand, I believe, both after the conversation with me, but also with legal counsel, that there's a lot to look at, and the timing of this is not all our own, and a lot of it does is encumbered upon the FAA to participate in that. So we do have their attention. I mean, we on the conference call was not only the ADO's office, but it was FAA compliance, and they did inform us that as this progressed, that they would get additional people involved, perhaps their legal team and that sort of thing. So this is something that's very serious to the FAA, as well as to the benefit of the airport and the landowner. So I wish I could say it's a month or 2 months. It's been about 6 weeks now to this point in time.
Does that satisfy your question? There are a lot of moving parts in it, and if we have any chance at all of being a part of that grant that would allow us to purchase it, that would be an ideal solution, but we haven't gotten an answer on that.
No, and they just now have the legal opinion. So, that took time to go through all that whole process. But one thing that's really interesting about this grant process, that particular grant itself, there's no local match. So
it's 100%.
Yeah, if we fall into that bucket, it would be 100% grant, and it wouldn't cost us, the airport, anything.
Do we know what that parcel, the total parcel, it would sell for?
It's about between $4 and $5 million for 28 acres. It's about $4 to $6 a square foot. And that's based upon the arena lumber yard that sold just in the last year. So that's a valuable comp.
Let me make one comment in response to my associate's comment about timing. I'm not real concerned. In fact, they can wait. And I'll tell you why. Because when my company moved our facility to our present location, which is adjacent to the subject property, that property owner took their sweet old time in approving our move because it blocked their through-the-fence access. And when I say sweet old time, we're talking 9 months to a year.
Good to know. All right,
that
Mr. Tekus.
That was the prior owner of this lot. It wasn't the current owner.
That's correct. It was the prior owner.
All right. Any other questions? Do we have any public comment on this item? Okay, we don't intend to go forward with a motion tonight, just informational purposes, so we will move forward. Item number 6 for possible action, Carson City Airport Authority to consider approval of an airport architectural engineering and planning services contracts. Mr. Moen.
Well, I know that there's one person in the audience who's been waiting for this one. I did inform Mr. Dickin prior to the meeting that I put him at the very end of it because I figured he was going to sit through the meeting anyway. So I thought this worked out pretty well for both of us. As you know, we went through the RFQ process this summer, and we identified top candidates for both the planning and airport planning consultant as well as the engineering consultant. We selected, after the scoring, we selected Armstrong Engineering Consultants and Kaufman & Associates to do the planning. And so the current process that we've been under has, we've asked them to submit to us draft agreements, of which were reviewed by us, and then once we were satisfied with the content of the agreement, we're bringing that here today for approval. Now, one thing that the agreement process that's spelled out in the FAA advisory circular is you agree on the language of the agreement, and then you take a scope of work and you ask both the consultants to price that project, and then we take that information and we go out to independent organizations and other consultants and ask them to price the same work and come up with a fee schedule. Now, both Armstrong and Kaufman Associates submitted in their agreements fee schedules, so we do have that information. But currently, Armstrong is working on the scope of work of the perimeter fence, which is our next project on our ACIP. And then as part of that, Kaufman Associates is working on the environmental piece of that. So one thing that in my discussions with Mike Dickin and Chris Knox was, in the airport planning world, they're doing all the bulk of the work right now with the master plan, Kaufman Associates is, and they're a subcontractor to Atkins. Theoretically, there could be very little work for Kaufman to do once that plan is adopted and in place. And it was suggested by Armstrong that we look towards Kaufman to do the environmental type work to keep them engaged in the process. And Armstrong is certainly capable of doing that. But I thought that was a great suggestion to keep the two teams working together on these items. And so with that being said, legal counsel's reviewed the agreements. We've adopted the format of both of the Kaufman agreement for both for a couple of reasons. One is that Kaufman has used that agreement and many times with the FAA, and it's been quote-unquote bulletproof. And that allowed us, when Armstrong looked at it and they concurred with it, it allowed us to make a clean adoption. So we're really operating on a level playing field with both agreements, and we're not running in different directions and trying to mend things. So I think in the process, it's really going to work out well for the airport. So with that being said, I didn't print out those agreements for this. This packet would have been a ream of paper for both of you if I printed everything out. And so that's been available for your review. If you have any questions specifically, please let me know, or legal counsel. I did specify when I sent those agreement out that it was satisfactory to legal counsel and offered the protections for the airport authority.
Any questions of Mr. Moen? Has everybody had a chance to go through these online? I had a chance to go through them, and I thought they were consistent. Any public comment on this item? Any questions? Okay. At this time, I would accept a motion to approve the professional service agreements with Armstrong Engineering Consultants and Kaufman Associates, and for the airport staff to complete the independent fee estimates and complete the negotiations with Armstrong Engineering Consultants and Kaufman and Associates. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Mr. Golden is moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Rogers has seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. None heard. Motion carries. Okay, moving on to item H. I do not have an airport engineer's report this evening. Does anybody else have information that Mr.
Fitzgerald provided a copy of the engineer report today. I did include, because it was very similar to last month's. It was talked about our master planning process, which everybody's heard at nauseum tonight, but also the update on the airport construction project. You probably saw through various emails or discussions that we did all the crack sealing, and we did identify a couple areas that were along the taxiway Bravo to the east that the cracking has exceeded what it was when it was initially assessed, as well as a couple of areas along Alpha and Delta. So we went through about two or three pallets of extra material just because of the way those cracks had developed since the original survey. And so we submitted a change order for approximately $27,000, which still falls in the limit of the initial grant. And so that was to cover the cost of the excess material. And also there's an area that's going to require not just fill, but going to need to be saw cut and hot patched. And so none of that work's going to take place till we're on the schedule now of May 6th. I was adamant that if we're going to split this up, that we had a firm date. That'll be weather dependent, of course, but at least that we have something on the calendar on grant, on Q&D's work list that they can work around us versus us hoping we can fall back into the schedule somewhere. So the fog seal, the final hot saw cut and hot patch will not take place until the spring. But I have inspected all the work area, including, as I mentioned last meeting, I think Alpha Della, but I walked Taxiway Bravo Charlie, taxi lanes Echo and Foxtrot, and also the perimeter road up to Gate 4. And we identified a couple areas that needed some extra material, but they've done a really good job to date. And they work real well with the airport community. We did allow, by email soliciting the airport community, if they wanted to do work on their own ramp, for whether it's Carson Air Group or Jet Ranch, to reach out to Q&D and work out an arrangement so they could get their work done while they're already had staged the equipment and are on site. And that's all I have from Mr. Fitzgerald's report.
Thank you. Moving on to item I, airport manager's report.
I'll keep this one brief as well, since we covered a couple things. The snowplow should be back this week. It does sound like we're going to get a bi-directional plow on it that NDOT is providing. The October fuel numbers, Member Golden and I have talked about this a little bit. I wasn't aware in the beginning, as you heard last week, that the full service numbers and the self-serve are different. They come from different sources. And so I was reporting just the full service fuel numbers. And when we included self-serve, it became quite a different number. So just to give you a quick idea of what we did in September, we're up from October fuel flows at 28,820 gallons total at a fuel flowage rate of 5 cents. That comes out about $1,400 a month, and that's been very consistent. I wasn't able to break out the self-serve numbers for Jet A and Avgas, so I'm just going to give you the total for this month. Sierra Skyway, they have not only started, the slabs are complete, but they're going vertical. When I saw it the other day, the steel on walls and roofs were complete, and they were going to begin sheetrocking today. So that's projects moving well. I think the weather's really benefited that project. He's had no precipitation to deal with, and the work area's been dry, so that's been really good for him. We do have a check in hand from the insurance company about the last fence run-in we had off East College Parkway. So we do have the materials on order. Work should probably begin next week and be completed in a day. I did respond to the wind farm issue, and then I got a phone call from the company that is proposing it to meet. And so I'm waiting to hear back from them. They're going to bring in their director from California, and I'll give you a heads up on that, Chair Law, to attend with me. And we may bring our legal counsel, if he has nothing else to do that day, to discuss what their proposal is. I haven't seen anything updated on the FAA website.
I'd like to see us and about 200 of our finest friends in the office when he shows up from La Jolla.
They may have a real reason to come in to see us. So I don't think they would have reached out to us if they didn't already see perhaps a stick in the cog. Yeah, right. I did mention the vice president's visit. I want to say that event went really well. It was kind of interesting to watch it unfold. But there was one incident involved in that. Raven helicopter did strike a couple of high-tension power wires at the top of, I'm not definitive, is it Lakeview Hill or Duck Hill? Okay, yeah, right at the top there. And you may have seen the email that's closing 580 from 50 all the way up to the north end of Washoe Lake for 7-1 both Saturday and Sunday. So that was quite an incident. But I did reach out to NV Energy about putting delineators on those power lines. The FISDO inspector, Larry Cheek, contacted me and advised me that it's not even on a sectional. So somehow those got erected and put up and didn't get identified on a sectional. So we're going to see about ensuring that we do that and delineating them. But that was – the Raven helicopter was present for the motorcade as it was going from Carson to Reno Rio Carson, and they didn't have air cover on that last 30 miles because of the little incident. It created about a 5-acre fire, but was quickly put out. Nobody was injured, so that was all good. But that's all I have.
Would you like to also talk to them about the meeting we had with the fire department and the...
Thank you, Cheryl. Totally forget that. Cheryl and I sat with several members of the airport or the city engineering department and the fire marshal about numbering, lettering, addressing airport hangars. And this has been presented to the airport for a long time. Council Takis alerted me to it very early on, and I've had a couple different meetings with them. What they seem to have circled back with is that their emergency dispatch system without an address to find the needle in the haystack where maybe somebody's in his hangar and he has a heart attack and he may not be making the call, but it could be somebody that's with them and not know where they are. Chair Law and I did go to the emergency dispatch center and were able to observe their system. We had Gary Province make a phone call from the airport, and it shows up in the general area of the airport on a cell phone, but it didn't give you an address. And so what they want to do is they're proposing something that they observed at Minden where you actually give street names to these various hangars, and they are numbered appropriately with the right size numbers that meet the city municipal code, and that would allow somebody that's not familiar with the airport layout to tell a dispatch where this hangar is, where the incident occurs. If it's a fire, they said, you know, we'll eventually figure it out. But if it's a medical, it could be, you know, hit and miss to find that location. Now, the critical piece of information that came out of this is it does not require hangar owners to re-record their deed of the hangar. So the assessor said, hey, we're just going to use APN numbers for that. We don't need to have a street address. Right now, everything south of the airport certainly is 2600 East College Parkway. There's some stuff off of the north end that's listed as Arrowhead. But beyond that, there's just not a good nomenclature together for proper numbering. So they're going to submit to us some proposals that are laid out with each of the hangar rows. We're going to look at those, see if we have any suggestions. We're going to socialize it with the tenant community and emphasize that it's not really the airport that wants this. It's for them. And if we can, we did have a discussion with a group of tenants that showed up for a construction meeting, and they were all like, what's the problem? You know, so there may be issues that arise as we step through this, but I think the city has done a really good job of determining that they're going to make this as painless as possible by not requiring people to go in and record deeds and make changes like that. But you'll have to notify utilities. You'll have to notify, you know, if they get mail there, which most of them don't. Most of these hangars on the older side may have had phone lines in some of them, but, you know, those are immaterial as you move forward. You know, the only reason anybody has probably a landline now is it's bundled with their other services of some nature. So, but that's the quick wrap-up of that.
The main outcome from that, as far as I was concerned, was there will be a placard put on the end of each hangar building that will give the taxiway or the alleyway that it's adjacent to, and it will list, using the city's markings, where approximately that block is in reference to all the other numbers in town, and then it'll give the unit numbers some are this way and some are this way, and it'll go on the end of the building. So we will have some cash outlay as far as the Carson City Airport Authority is concerned to mark those buildings appropriately, but it won't require that the people who actually have the hangars have any large expense other than putting a number on the front of their hangar. Yeah. Yeah, and that's true. But I don't see it as a huge outlay, but as far as the safety for the people who are there who may suffer a medical emergency, it is important, I think. So it was a good meeting. They seem to be very cooperative, and we'll go forward with that probably at the first of the year. Our treasurer, moving on to the legal counsel's report.
Yeah, just on that last item, I just would advise you to proceed with caution. When we had a meeting, a lot of the personnel have changed on this. Originally, the fire department was relying on GIS personnel from Douglas County who are somehow on contract with Carson City. And the meeting that we had with the airport community was, it was a pitchfork and torch meeting. And so that is what you're working against. And the fact that you're suggesting that it's solved in some respect because they don't have to re-record something, it's ludicrous to think that anybody would be asked to re-record something. What you're asking them is to change from the information that's in their recorded lease, and so recorded deeds. And so you need to be careful there. And that's my only word of caution on that. I'm not involved with this project per se. I haven't been called in on it, but I don't want you guys to walk into a buzzsaw on that. Okay. In terms of other items on the legal counsel's report, as you all know, there was an election recently, and some people changed in politics. From the airport standpoint, the most immediate concern, at least to me, in terms of our airport work, is that Al Kramer was reelected. Al Kramer is carrying the bill that we worked on to modify the legislation for the Airport Authority's act that created the Airport Authority. And so that's a good thing. Otherwise, we'd be trying to figure out somebody else to carry that bill and bring them up to speed. So it's good that Al's in there. And, somebody came to me and said, well, you know, he's an R. That's really not going to help you much. Now, he is a Republican, and it is true that in the Assembly, the Democrats have a supermajority. They don't have to talk to the Republicans about anything. They don't need their votes. On the Senate side, it is one vote less than a supermajority. So the Democrats almost have a supermajority there. Plus, we have a Democratic governor that's been elected. So the comment to me was, well, unless you've got a D involved in your bill, it's probably not going to go anywhere. I think that may be true if you have something controversial that affects other parties. But keep in mind that our bill, the only entities that are really affected by it are ourselves, the Airport Authority, and Carson City. And we've already worked the bill through Carson City and gotten their support and concurrence on it. So I don't know that there's anybody out there who's going to be working against us in the bill. I can't see that there would. And so I think we're going to be okay on that. In addition to that, both Al Kramer and Ben Kiekheffer, who is our senator for here, are both guys that work well across the aisle. Whether they're in the majority or the minority, those guys both are very good at talking to their constituents and working toward the good of the outcome of the legislation and pretty much avoiding the games of, well, I have to get something for this to get my vote. And so I think we're in good shape as a result of the elections from that standpoint. Time will tell. But I will continue to be working with Assemblyman Kramer and make sure this bill gets out, and hopefully out early in the session. We got it into bill drafting early. Hopefully it'll get out early, and we can get it taken care of in those early stages of the legislative session where it appears that not a whole lot gets done. So that would be our game plan there. The only other tidbit I can add involves the NV Energy a replacement of that power line. It's pretty important that they replace it. The reason they're actually going to the extent of shutting down 580 to do it is because that power line feeds Incline Village. Incline Village is currently getting its power from a different power company who's agreed to step in and help out NV Energy, but they have been informed by this other power company. Cold weather comes or something else comes, first entity we're cutting off is Incline Village, because we have to deal with our own customers first. And that's why there's the severity or the importance of actually closing the highway, because that's a pretty dramatic step. The other thing that I've heard is from some folks at NV Energy is they really expect to get it done on Saturday. They've reserved Sunday just an abundance of caution. So I think there's a good chance that the only interruption will be that morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday, which would be good. It's closed entirely between Carson City and Reno, the complete section.
Including East Lake.
Including, they're going to close off Hobart Road, so you cannot cut through, you can't cut through Lakeview and then cross under and get around East Lake and get around. And so your options are you go up to the lake and go around 28 through Incline and back down, or you go out to Virginia City and up come down through that way. The NDOT public information is that their recommended course, I didn't believe it until I read it myself, is you drive all the way out to Silver Springs and take USA Parkway up to 80 and come back. You know, you'd have to want to get between Reno and Carson City real bad to drive that far. And by the time you drive that whole thing, the time period for its closure may be open. It may be over. No. The problem is you've got that bottleneck at Duck Hill. You've got that bottleneck kind of at Duck Hill, right? You know, after you go over the top of the hill, leaving the north end of Carson City. And there isn't any way around that. I guess... Yeah, and when you close that, then you realize, yeah, there really is only one highway, you know, between the two points. But that's good. And then, And then I've heard conflicting things on the wind turbine from my friends who are in the power world, the energy world. I've heard that it's they're floating these ideas all over the place. The same group is just trying to see where it sticks. But you hear those things. I think you still got to take it seriously. That's a whole lot of wind turbines. I have to believe that their game plan is to generate 70 megawatts or more. And if they do, then they need to get a utility environmental permit from the Nevada Public Utilities Commission, which provides yet another place for us to step in and oppose it, because that utility environmental impact permit also involves the impact on not just the environment like we think of the plants and trees and animals. It also affects how it affects people and industries. And I've been through that process before, it's a difficult process to get those permits. I've applied for them before, and it was a long road and a lot of people you have to satisfy. And so I'm thinking that if they are going through with that project, we will have opportunities there to plug that hole and try and make sure they don't go there. Having large wind turbines near an urban center is really stupid to begin with. Yes, you're close to the load that might be using them, but you're also close to the people who are going to be so completely annoyed by both the sound, the effect on the environment, and the visual aspects. There's a string of wind turbines that go up one of the ridges on Maui, and, it's never bothered me, and it's away from all the people, but it's in your view. And I cannot believe how many people approached me when my parents were still alive and living there. Every time I was there, they would tell me, isn't that ugly? And it was like, okay. And now you're going to build them right next to a city of, almost 300,000 people. It doesn't mesh. And I think part of it is you've got people running it who are from La Jolla who are maybe not that familiar with this area. And it looks like when you actually look at the legal entities that are involved, it actually looks like it's a Swedish company and it's Swedish funded. And they may be even farther removed from the environment. It sounds to me like they haven't thought at all about the aviation piece. And maybe they have, but it'll be interesting to hear what they have to say. That's all I got. Any questions, I'm happy to answer.
I just think anytime somebody wants to put 495-foot towers across the top of a mountain range, it's kind of stupid, but that's me. Anyway, we will move on to the treasurer's report. Since our treasurer is not here this evening, any questions you have about this can be directed to our manager, to Larry, when he returns tomorrow. Moving forward to the report from authority members, does anyone have any reporting on any correspondence or internal communications or status reports or comments on things that you've been looking into that have relevance to the airport authority?
I have a quick question, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir. Mr. Golden.
In the past, we have not had a December meeting necessarily. Are we having a December meeting?
It's true. In the past, we've had a hard time getting a quorum to a December meeting because the third Wednesday of December is always very close to Christmas. So it's your guys' call. It's Linda's call, actually, the chairman's call.
If there's no one here that would be objecting to it, I would suggest that we skip the December meeting and go to the January meeting.
I would note we didn't carry anything over from tonight to the next meeting specifically, so
I would certainly support that.
I would to obey the December meeting and go directly to the January meeting.
You don't do it by motion because we're not noticed to take that action.
True.
But you are the chairman and you set both the agenda and the time, so you can certainly you can just announce that. That is your decision.
Merry Christmas. I'll see you in January. How's that?
Works by me.
January 16th will be the next meeting.
Madam Chair, may I ask if there's any interest in moving these meetings from 6 p.m. to noon? No interest in that?
No.
I know we had a couple that people liked.
I know,
liked
but
that.
No.
Okay. I just thought I'd ask. All right.
Nice try, though. All right. Any public comment before we leave this evening? Come forward, please. State your name and spell your name for the record.
My name is Mike Dickun, D-I-K-U-N. On behalf of Armstrong Consultants, I want to express our gratitude and say we're very, very excited about working with you. The past two meetings have been informative and I'm looking forward to helping with some of the challenges that you're facing and moving forward with constant improvement here at the Carson City Airport. So thank you.
We appreciate your being here. Thank you very much. We look forward to the relationship. Any further public testimony at this time or public comment? Seeing none, items for the next agenda, if you have some, please get them to our manager before the next meeting in January. And I think that moves us to the adjournment. Any comments before we adjourn? None heard? We're out.